Welcome, welcome. It is great to have you here. Thank you so much for coming back to Damon Bruce Plus. This is our good friend Sam Batesh of Thinking Out Loud, and there's never a wrong time to talk to Sam, but if there was ever a right time, so much of his NFL attention is spent hovering over the games being played at Lincoln Financial Field. A card-carrying Eagles fan, we're not going to hold it against them, but boy, here we go, Sam. You wanted an early little matchup? I guess we got one, right?
This is so great. Now, you and I are dear, dear friends over the years, and we haven't had that many instances of really going at it. And really, I mean, Eagles and Niners over the years, and really, and frankly, look, you Bears, you obviously, I mean, you are up to speed with the Bears as well. And that's, you know, that's a piece of your existence
Watched a couple of their games.
Exactly. So there's been, I mean, double doink. We've had some interesting moments, right? We beat Jim Miller in a divisional ahead of an NFC championship loss to the Kurt Warner Rams when we were actually roommate. I believe right before us being roommates was that game, was a huge game. That was back when they gave away two byes, and I believe the Bears were the two seed that year. So we've had interesting games, and there's been sort of flyer sharks over the years and all that, but whatever. Bottom line is, you and I have spent over the last really, I mean, certainly this football season, we have been just absolutely bunk bedmates, and we have been talking about the Niners. We bring up the Eagles when it's necessary. We do all this great prep for this show that you and I do every week, and it's so much fun just talking football and anything else that we find interesting. The idea that this has been culminating into this absolutely speeding torpedo that neither one of us really saw on the horizon is hilarious. We were building up, and I was the king of the cheerleading squad for Niners are going to be the one seed. I had that in my mind firmly entrenched. And now, two teams that are disappointed with where they ended up in the seeding are facing each other in what was very recently the NFC Championship game and could have been
this season. Here's the deal. Are the Eagles really disappointed? Because it feels like they sort of dialed it up without much worry about it. I mean, I've seen some of the reaction in Philadelphia is like, yeah, well, they rested everybody in week 18 because they knew they were either going to, you know, like they're not worried about the Niners if that's the team that's coming up. And I don't know if that's true. I just think that they really didn't have, you know, you want the home game, they got the home game. Opponent at that point, I don't know how much you play for a matchup as much as you play for the home game, which they secured. So
yes,
I don't think they rested starters in any way, shape, or form because of a Niner disrespect or anything. I think they rested starters because if you have that luxury, it's a nice thing to take right before you start playing real football games.
And they simply, Damon, they simply took the tact of this. Now, for fans, this is so emotional. And I want to separate this if I can. And it's hard to do as an Eagles fan. Clearly, Sunday was a disappointing day because side by side, we're watching Lions and Bears. Great job of the NFL. They set up that finally, the afternoon slate, the 4 p.m. Eastern slate, probably the best it's been all season, right? Was this past weekend because they slotted seven games there. They all had some effect on either the number one pick or playoff seeding. And so to have Bears and Lions simultaneous with Eagles and Commanders, that was the way to do it because those games affected one another. The fact that the Lions are lining up for a game-winning field goal while Tanner McKee is throwing incomplete again on third and fourth down over and over again, and the Eagles are essentially now saying we had a chance at the two seed and didn't take it. As a fan, you're thinking, oh, we blew it. Then I just came to this calm realization. I texted all of my family in Philadelphia that's on one chain, just spitting at each other. How is it that I'm supposed to care more than the team did about this outcome?
Exactly. That's the way I feel about dead cap space. Fans right. Love yeah. Wringing their hands over dead cap space. It's an accounting error to these teams
as far as they're concerned.
They're not going to worry about it. I'm not going to really worry about it. By the way, what I do worry about, though, every single day is lunch. Where are you going to go to lunch? Oh, get yourself to Ike's for an Ike sandwich. Go ahead. Look, I don't know if the 49ers or the Eagles are going to put any rings on anyone's finger, but if you want some rings on a sandwich, you got some onion rings right there just waiting for you. Thank you so much to my man, Ike. Thank you to our friends at the Dubliner West Portal. A great place to go watch this wild card matchup. A great place to go watch the Hoosiers in the Peach Bowl. If you can't join me there in Atlanta, I'm taking off tomorrow morning, Sammy. I cannot wait to get to Atlanta. I got a bunch of friends waiting for me. It's going to be a great time. And I will make some plays over on Sleeper. And we encourage everybody to make your plays on Sleeper. Great user interface, incredible odds that you get to adjust with the parlays that you put together yourself. Check it out. $100 deposit match up to $100 when using the promo code Damon. Just click on the link that is right at the top of the description of this very video that you are watching right now. So thanks to all of our sponsors again. Thanks to Sammy for being here. Look, you and I just start going off in tangents. That's what I love. Is
yes.
We prep. We don't say, let's start with this. We just go, blah, we just go.
We have to.
To me, there's just one way through this for the 49ers. And even if they do this, I don't know it'll be enough to get them through this, because at some point they're going to be asked to play some defense. And I just don't know if they're capable. If they've been a little incapable of defense all year, they will be even less capable this week because of mounting injuries. They're signing guys from Arizona Cardinals to maybe, who are maybe going to play, you know, linebacker. It's crazy the situation that they're in, but they don't get out of this situation. They don't even have a puncher's chance in this situation. Sammy, tell me if I'm right or wrong, unless they run all over Philadelphia like Rocky. They need to run this ball. I mean, I started looking at the games that Philadelphia lost this year, throwing out week 18. I didn't even look at that box score. Don't even care about that week 18 box score, because that wasn't the Philadelphia Eagles. But if you want to beat the Eagles in four of their five losses, the Broncos ran for 130. The Giants ran for 172. The Cowboys went for 125. The Bears went for 281. And then the Chargers ran for 169. If the 49ers aren't somewhere in that 120, 150-yard rushing range, I don't even think they're in this game. This might get ugly fourth quarter if they're not doing that. Agree or disagree?
Completely agree with this and this alone. It's the Bears game that you want to watch over and over again. Eagles and Bears from this season. The Larry Kruger, Kyle Manungai game, I'll call it, because you had 200-yard rushers.
Contact balance.
Correct. I'm not suggesting that you're going to see Brian Robinson and McCaffrey at 100-yard clip apiece. That's not what I'm suggesting. What I am saying is it was the wow. That's not the Eagles we thought they were in that game. From a run defense standpoint, that was running through butter for the Bears. They figured Ben Johnson that week figured that out, and the Eagles were not the same. Now, granted, there's some of Jalen Carter not being there. That is interesting, but it's Jordan Davis that is their run stopper, not necessarily Jalen Carter, and he was there. So that game simply was the formula. Would it be stupid for us not to say that, yeah, Christian McCaffrey is going to have to be crucial in a game that the Niners beat the Eagles in? Yeah, obviously, but you're talking about specifically running, and McCaffrey has done, I mean, again, we're talking nearly 1,000, right? I mean, nobody wants to talk about the Seattle box score either to end the season, but McCaffrey was every bit of the double threat that he is supposed to be. The fantasy football number one pick from a few years ago, that's who McCaffrey was this season. So it's not just running McCaffrey in that way, but you're talking about that. You're suggesting that it is truly the running to dictate the pace.
He's got their defense. Brian Robinson Jr. can't just be an observer from the sidelines. I think he needs 10 carries. I think he needs the in the middle of the offensive line carries. He's going to have to keep the Eagles honest. And I think they're going to have to line him up in the backfield to get any kind of play action with maybe McCaffrey in the slot again, because here we are in week now 19 of football for the 49ers. When you're going looking at this wide receiver core going like, good luck with that.
It's also really important to look at the Eagles secondary, Damon. There's a strength of this team. These names became household at the Super Bowl, but Cooper DeJean and Quinyon Mitchell, those two guys have solidified this defense. Whatever you saw of Kelee Ringo just running through Terry McLaurin every play.
Who went up to Blankenship and was like, man, you're dope. And he's like, no, that's the other one.
That's the other guy, right? Now, they do have a podcast called Exciting Whites, the two of them. So, they get mistaken a lot because of that. But, yeah, so Blankenship and Cooper DeJean understand where they are in the world. They are considered the Exciting Whites on this defense. But the strength of the Eagles defense is that secondary, which is what you saw if you cared about that Week 18 box score. It was Kelee Ringo and Jacorian Bennett, who they had gotten from the Raiders, just running through Terry McLaurin and any Washington receiver that was there for a defensive pass interference penalty that whole game. They were terrible. But when you talk about the front end of that secondary that were off the field for much of that game, that's the strength. The Niners, the Niners don't want this to be a Brock Purdy, Juwan Jennings, Ricky Pearsall game. Kittle a little bit. Now that could be, although look, the Eagles certainly neutralized from a tight end standpoint. We all remember what happened in the Super Bowl. You can say some of that is on Kelsey's, you know, now the end of his career, but that was, the tight end was neutralized within that game along with many other things, but stay away from the secondary. Stay away from the secondary is the key to beating the Eagles. And it's that run game where there's an opportunity.
Keeping teams out of the end zone all year. What are they getting? Yes. 9 passing touchdowns this season. That's it. I mean, that's an impressive number to go through an entire NFL season and only give up 9 passing touchdowns. So I don't think it's going to be a, you know, 3 to 4 touchdown day for Brock Purdy. I just don't see that, which means Christian McCaffrey and Brian Robinson Jr. I just think have to go bonkers in this game. And you know, look, this is an Eagles defense that wasn't nearly as good as the Eagles defense that won a Super Bowl, but they are still good. It's definitely not the same Eagles offense or on special teams. But when I look at this and just, you know, how do you beat the Eagles? Is there a common thread? What's that number? What do we look for? I don't think I've split the atom when I said, well, you run the ball against them. It's a good way to beat good teams. That's pretty much a football truth all the way around. Look, this is just, there's a game with all sorts of data points that just say the 49ers are kind of in for it this weekend. They really are. And if they rise above it, man, congratulations. They will have circled the wagons. They will have overcome the situation. They will have absolutely, you know, been the team that didn't, you know, was felt disrespected, blah, blah, you know, all the print the t-shirt bullshit that doesn't really matter to football games, but sometimes does, will have to matter. The Eagles are 6th in DVOA. 4 of the Niners' 5 losses are against teams with DVOAs 7 or higher. So there's just every single time you look for the data point that means, well, this could happen. It's hard to find. I mean, it's really hard to find, which brings me to kind of the one question that I needed to ask you about, because again, as a fan, as someone who is risen way above his fandom to the point where we can talk about this and actually break it down like we're professionals, air quotes over that. But so the reason why some Niner fans are just chapped at Shanahan at all times is because he has not won the Super Bowl. What's amazing is that the Super Bowl has hardly gotten Sirianni off the roasting spit in Philadelphia. There are a contingent of Philadelphia Eagles fans who, with the Super Bowl t-shirt on, will still tell you this is the wrong guy for the job. Why is that? Why do people feel that way other than just, you know, 2 out of every 3 people in Philadelphia are raging assholes? What is that? Why is there such a disconnect between we've won with this guy, the ultimate prize, still don't trust him?
I'll take this way back, and then I'll speed up the answer. The Wayback Machine tells me that Carson Wentz was shipped out of town and then Doug Peterson was fired. I never understood that. Okay, I thought the Eagles had an issue between which of those two they were going to keep in that era. In the era of, we've got a statue of Peterson outside. Of course, he's talking to Foles, not Wentz in that one. But Wentz was clearly losing something, and Foles was the only one who had sparked the magic of the playoff run. So there was that conversation of, we paid Wentz a ton of money, maybe he's not going to be that guy. And there was a rift behind the scenes, apparently. The guy, I'm forgetting his name, he became an offensive coordinator and then was fired. I'll get his name eventually. But he's the one who drew up, apparently, the Philly special in that. And there was apparently conversations that Doug Peterson didn't want to fire members of his staff. And that was a rift between him and Lurie. And then there was the idea that Wentz wasn't working hard enough. And it was like, all right, one of these two guys is going to go. Well, Wentz went, traded to Indy. And it seemed like, all right, Peterson, you constructed. You're the only Super Bowl we've ever won. Peterson is then fired in the next meeting he has with Lurie. Really shocking. So for Eagles fans, tough to say we've wanted a Super Bowl, wanted a Super Bowl. This guy brought it to us. Now he's fired. I don't think Eagles fans wanted Doug Peterson fired. So let's start there. Okay. I think there was, at that point, the organization was ready to say, okay, yeah, Foles won us the Super Bowl, not Wentz, right? So there's a lot of, like, of course, Eagles fans loved Wentz, but they could wrap their head around the idea that the organization said, all right, we're going in another direction. But then Peterson out. And remember the press conference, Damon, the introduction to Sirianni, was a stumbling mess. It wasn't quite Tom Sula, right? It didn't rise to the level. I guarantee you it's a drop on many radio shows in Philadelphia, but the Tom Sula was a drop on every show in the country. Tom Sula was so foolish and ridiculous. And again, what was it, two wins that season? I mean, so Tom Sula, it was both the press conference followed up by nothing at all. Sirianni follows the press conference where everyone wants to roast him, and you're following up the only Super Bowl champion the team has ever had, right? That's who you're following in Peterson. And remember this, you're also the Here's Eagles. The
thing. So I love the background. I don't give a shit. They then start the timeline. They won the Super Bowl. Still don't like him. Explain that to me.
Okay. 2023 season, Damon. So 22 season, Eagles go to the Super Bowl. Hurts plays well, although he fumbles in the Super Bowl. And the Eagles lose to the Chiefs on the Bradbury defensive pass interference in the end zone, right? That next season, Eagles go 10-1, including a win against Buffalo in overtime. Then it's your game, Damon. Remember, it is the Deebo Samuel revenge game against the Eagles. The Eagles get slaughtered in that game. They then lose the next week to the Cowboys, get destroyed. The Eagles season unravels to the point where not only do they lose a game to the Cardinals late in the season, they get humiliated in the wild card round in Tampa. Again, they lose.
Again.
That's it.
Then you win the Super Bowl.
And correct.
This was not in any way, shape, or form a bad year. There were some disappointing trends. You know, Jalen Hurts throws for 300. We lose. Riddle me that. AJ Brown, this guy's a malcontent. We get it. But it's not like the Eagles have come apart at the seams in any way. And so I don't understand, other than the fact, you know, do you want to? And there are some people who want to live in the world of never happy, never satisfied. I can't be happy.
So there's got to be a little of that, right? There's got to be a little of that, of course. And here's the other part of it. Do you remember when the Chiefs were just walking to the Super Bowl every season, or at least the AFC Championship? And there was a lot of years in a row. But they're losing, but they're barely winning, right? They're not winning the right way. What happens when you beat the Chiefs on that stage in that way? You're elevated to a place where now the assumption, certainly by the local fans, and frankly, you can see it in the national media also, all of a sudden you're supposed to now beat the league like that every week.
Right. You're Optimus Prime now, right? You're the best transformer there is.
And okay. You and I always talk about this. The league is not designed for every game to be Super Bowl champ versus worst version of the Raiders every week. That doesn't happen very often. It's not right. You don't have those games don't happen. The outcomes are what they are. The Rams lost in Carolina this season. Everyone was stunned. Now here we are. It's a rematch in the playoffs of all things, which at the time seemed absurd. This league is more even than you think. The idea that the Eagles were the best team by a large margin only happened because in that game, they did something to the Chiefs that we had never before seen. And that put Sirianni up to those standards. And the problem for the Eagles fans is the season I just told you about, a season that was 10-1, left an awful taste in their mouth in the end.
Completely unreasonable expectations. That's what it is.
That's all it is. You follow a Super Bowl season where you lost by a 10-1 start and then unravel, even though you then win the Super Bowl. This season, when they stumbled against Dallas up 21-0, lost that game, then lost on Black Friday to the Bears, then lost on Monday Night Football, four interceptions with Hurts. It's about blaming somebody. It's not as interesting to TP Kevin Petullo, the offensive coordinator's house, as it is to say, fire the head coach. He hasn't put together the right staff. That's what people think. And let's also say this. My biggest issue with this from an Eagles perspective, Damon, is that Nick Sirianni is the opposite of Chip Kelly. He should be what Eagles fans want. Nick Sirianni spits at what everyone else thinks he should do and carries this very Philadelphia bravado about himself. It's this city. I understand Chip Kelly seemed a little too smart for the room and people didn't like that. Okay, I get that in Philadelphia that didn't fly, just the same way Gabe Kapler didn't fly in Philadelphia, I'm sure, right? I can understand that. I can wrap my head around that. Nick Sirianni to me feels like a freaking Geno's Philly steak. That's what he seems like. This guy's a cheesesteak. This guy's Philadelphia. I don't understand. He's more brash, bravado, take your tush push. We're going to put it right up there again. He's the guy that wants to prove you wrong, even when he might be wrong. He's Philadelphia.
Speaking of tush push, where has it gone? The brotherly shove, which used to seemingly be in the center of any, you know, game plan, has sort of faded away. It was ever present in the first half of the season, not so much second half of the season. Are they just holding it? Are they just waiting to unleash?
So the Niners can expect this.
They can probably get 6 yards of tush push on the Niners all day almost.
It is no longer guaranteed for a yard. Athletic put out a great piece, which and the title was "The Tush Push Might Be Banning Itself," which is to say what was once an 88% play is now down to 62%. Yeah. And again, I'll point at the Chicago game. The play in the Chicago game, the Eagles actually lost that game on a failed tush push that went the other way. Do you remember when the Bears stripped the ball out of Hurts' hands on Black Friday? That shows you. So what's happening is the play is being officiated differently because in week two against Kansas City, Dean Blandino said on that Fox broadcast, "I'm done with this play." And that was an unwavering shot across the bow to all officials to say, we have to look at this now. And so they're getting called for false starts and they're no longer getting the benefit of the whistle on forward progress, Damon. Teams, that the officials are allowing teams to strip the ball while it is still deemed legal. And that's a more difficult play. If you're being pushed and held up and now having to hold the ball, that really, that's not about Hurts' legs being strong. That's about fingers with everybody trying to get it out of hit, right? The support of the team is no longer around the ball. It's a very smart tactic by the defense. That is the weakest point of the play, is actually where Hurts has the ball.
You know what I think the difference is here? Mekhi Becton.
Well, you would have to point.
I think a part of it is we got a tale of two tackles. I'm going to tell you right now, Trent Williams is going to go in this game. He's definitely
going
to play.
Oh, he's going. Yes. Yeah, yes. Going.
Lane Johnson.
Okay. I would say he's going. I want to put out there the idea that just like Trent Williams, Lane Johnson is going. And if you look at the splits between with and without Lane Johnson for this offense, it's a horror movie. This offense with Lane Johnson is entirely different, but can we at least say that this season, that's not even the case? You said something earlier and we moved past it quickly. This offense is not a little different than last season. It's don't even look at last season. This Saquon Barkley, 2,000 yards. This is not, do you understand how different this is? And you said the only guy that you could circle if you're trying to solve the case is Mekhi Becton. The only problem is, he's looked like a vagabond with the Chargers. He's been entirely useless and injured for the Chargers. So it's not as if the Chargers run game got this huge surge because of Mekhi Becton. But they
also have lost every tackle that they've ever signed all at the same time. So,
and again, it's about situations. Mekhi Becton was nothing with the Jets. Then he's with the Eagles and he's a Super Bowl champ with his iced out grill on Super Bowl Sunday, crying with tears down his eyes. And he's with the Chargers now, okay? It's about the situation. And what he was in this situation in Philly is different. So you can't say that. But the only thing you can definitively point to, I will also say, Jordan Mailata is having an awful season. He's got the best accent on the team for sure. But if you look at pre-snap penalties and what they're getting out of their offensive line, it's not the same. You could say Dickerson's been injured. Lane Johnson's been injured. Cam Jurgens is not having the same season as at center. Last year, there was no transition from Jason Kelsey to Cam Jurgens at the center position. You had no issue. But that line was pushing you. How often is Saquon Barkley hit at or behind the line of scrimmage this season versus last?
It'll probably be less times than you see Christian McCaffrey get hit behind the line of scrimmage. I'll say this though, Saquon Barkley, after a lot of tread came off the tire season last year, in the last few weeks, I looked at this, he's back to 4.5 a carry and he just rested in week 18. So look out for Saquon Barkley. If you can't tackle him, this game could be ugly. Another thing that I see, Eagles give up a lot of fourth quarter leads, man. When they do lose, they lose in spectacular fashion in the fourth quarter. So we'll see if the Niners can just hang around, and then maybe do something. That's going to be hard. I think they just I think that they need to take the ball. They need to score on the opening drive. They need to play some Shanahan, playing from in front, not chasing a scoreboard. That's how they got to do it. I don't love them in this game. I do not love. I can't believe it's only Eagles -3.5.
Little disrespect there, but I somehow the chatter of the Eagles not being at that level has led to the idea. I think in Vegas, I think there's a lot of money that has affected that line, other than just the experts saying that's what it'd be. One last point about the tush push for 10 seconds.
Yeah, yes.
I expect, Damon, the Niners will see a wrinkle of this play. Sirianni's going to try one where they fake it and they try to get Saquon outside. That play worked brilliantly in the first game against Washington. I expect them to use the tush push not so much as a bully ball forward, but as a fake out for a bigger play.
Tush push, wishbone combo.
Yes.
Speaking of money talks, thank you, Excessive, who's throwing $5 into the beer fund for the Peach Bowl. We got Sunday Living coming in with $5. Thank you very much. What's more likely, IU winning it all or the 49ers beating the Eagles? Look, this sounds funny coming out of my mouth. I'll never be comfortable saying it. Indiana is the undefeated number one team in the country and the Las Vegas favorite to be national champion. So Indiana winning it all is the more likely scenario. RG 2312 says, if you're expecting logic from Philly fans, that's on you. They don't run on a reason. They run on emotion, passion, and generational sports trauma. There's a lot of truth there.
Damon, I do want to go back to that real quick in regards to trauma. That's why I brought up the 23 season.
Okay.
It's the trauma of being the best team in the league for a number of weeks. And then knowing that the season so spectacularly unraveled. And that's what it is. And that story's never come out. That story one day will come out. Something happened in that locker room. We don't know what it is. I don't know if it was Delonte West and LeBron James Mott. Like, I have no idea what happened. But something happened in that locker room that we will find out one day. And that's the trauma that Eagles fans are living with.
My man, Alex Bowman, putting 10 on a beer for me in Atlanta. Thank you very, very much. Dude, I heard that the concession prices, like for $10, I might be getting a four-course dinner in Atlanta. Apparently, that's in the one stadium that's not trying to
to gouge,
shake your pockets. So we'll see. Thank you very much, Alex. And what starting running back, quarterback, tight end gives us the best shot to win? It's Mac, B-Rob, and Tongas, to be frank. Too much sauce? You're on too much sauce right now because those are three incorrect answers. Brock Purdy, dude, how can you ever say anything negative about Christian McCaffrey? He's the only reason why you are where you are in the terms of happiness over the last three. Since the day they traded for Christian McCaffrey, there is not a more important player, voice, person, athlete, talent in the room than he. And, you know, I love the story of Jake Tongas.
It's been great.
I'm going to take George Kittle 1 million out of a million times ahead of him. What are we? I thank you very much for the super. Check yourself into a rehab facility. You are on drugs. Thank you.
I could see not Mac Jones, but I could see the other two guys having a role. You already mentioned Robinson. I could see Tongas on a great play for them. Absolutely. And Tongas has been part of that. But as far as more important than those guys, you're in a world of hurt if they're more important than those guys on Sunday. The key to this victory, McCaffrey is going to have to be every bit of special McCaffrey. And remember this, it's so interesting. We don't have a close game between these two teams in this little rivalry. In this recent rivalry, we've got Brock Purdy being smashed in the game in the NFC Championship.
Have not heard Hassan Reddick's name since that play.
Since that time. Right. Other than the fact that he wanted to be traded back to Eagles when he couldn't be, when he was with the Jets and not reporting to them after Saleh traded for him. That was absolutely, what a disaster Hassan Reddick was after that. But yes, Hassan Reddick wrecked that game. Wrecked the game for the Niners. And I understand Debo said, wow, when we get our chance, it's going to be different. If we had Brock, it would have been different. Fine. Brock didn't miss that game because he was sick that day. The Eagles knocked him out. So I want to remind everybody that. Now they didn't have, no. Brock was available. He was smashed so significantly by the defense. I mean, that line, that was a historic defensive line. There's never been a defensive line with more sacks in a season, ever. That was the most historic defensive line in history. Certainly that didn't win a Super Bowl. And so they got after Brock. So that game was what, 31-9, 31-7, I believe. And then the rematch, the Eagles absolutely stepped on them. But then, I mean, I'll give all credit to the Niners. The Niners' game plan to that is if it was an NFC championship, took the Eagles right out of their game. Deebo Samuel ate them for lunch, running the ball, catching the ball. He was yak-tacular on that day and destroyed them. And it wasn't close.
Speaking of yak-tacular play, I mean, I agree with this, Matthew. Tackling is a must. Here's the deal. It's really hard to tackle when you're down all of your defensive linemen that matter and all of your linebackers that matter. I mean, Malik Mustafa can only fill one gap at a time. He can't fill six gaps at once. You can't have Jair Brown playing the run and the pass without AJ Brown going bye-bye all the way behind you. So it's just, I hate the way the Niners set up on this chessboard. Doesn't mean they can't win the game of chess, but Shanahan has to absolutely uncork two or three, like, whoa, level plays and mismatch plays. The 49ers have to be perfect in their mistake-free execution. They cannot have a penalty-ridden game in any way, shape, or form and expect to win. They have to turn Jalen Hurts over. They have to.
Can we talk about that real quick? So Jalen Hurts, the Chargers game, he throws the four interceptions. And he threw an interception in the Bears game as well. And before that, he had been essentially interception-free. He had thrown an interception in the one anomaly game against the Giants where they were trying to come back late. But since the Super Bowl run, let's even just say since the bye week of last season, Jalen Hurts was a completely different guy. And here's why. This team was running the ball so well, Jalen Hurts was asked not to turn the ball over. Let's be very clear. Nick Sirianni, of all the things he figured out, he said, all right, Jalen, we're going to design situations where you are going to make big plays. But when it's not there, you roll out,
throw it away,
and you throw the ball out of bounds. That's your play. That's actually your third read. Your third read is out of bounds.
Right. Third read is throw.
That's it. That's what you're supposed to do. And you can see in the Chicago game, he rolls out, is about to throw the ball out of bounds, and then decides to force it to AJ Brown. It turns into an interception. And that's what Sirianni was trying to avoid. And when you have a team that runs the ball exceptionally well, historically well, as they had the season before, you have the benefit of not having to put the ball in your quarterback's hands in those situations. Any quarterback, Patrick Mahomes, Jalen Hurts, Brock Purdy, Joe Montana, the more you put the ball in his hands to make plays, the more prone the team is to turning the ball over. It's not about whether or not the quarterback is smart or good enough or anything. It is the percentages, Damon. That is all. So when you're able to turn around and hand the ball off, yeah, that's a higher percentage play of not turning the ball over than when you're throwing the ball 10, 15 yards down the field. Clearly, that's the difference. This season, Jalen has to make plays with his arm. It was a benefit and a bonus to last season. That's where the Niners are going to have opportunities. I understand this defense hasn't been amazing, but this defense really, this Niners defense has not been amazing at getting to the quarterback. That's the issue. And that doesn't necessarily put them at such a disadvantage because it's about what they're going to be able to do down the field on Devontae and AJ Brown. That's going to be the difference.
Diamador Lenore has to have a huge game. Somebody, Upton Stout, you're going to have to do something to dot your rookie year in a way that makes everybody go, love that guy, coming out of Philadelphia. I just think it's basically mistake-free, efficient football, and even with that, the Niners got themselves painted into a corner on this one. So some other magic dust. Steal a possession with the fake punt that they haven't run now for how many years in a row? The fake field goal that hasn't happened in infinity years? Something that makes you go, whoa, no one was expecting that, I think has to happen for the Niners. I don't think the Niners can go in here and play straight up football with the Eagles. In the way they're currently built, with the injuries that they currently have, I just don't think they can go out and play a day of football without something coming from the land of make-believe to get them over the hump. Hold on real quick, Sammy. We got another super here from Red Jet. Love you, Red Jet. We need a whole lot of sage, holy water. Yeah, sage, holy water, prayer. I mean, go Niners always. Hit that like, sub, share. Thank you very much. She's part of the 50,000 now. 50,000 subs we got. Please hit like
and subscribe. Congrats, Damon. Congrats to that. That's huge. We made it.
do the same thing over on Thinking Out Loud with Siciliano and Sam. Please do that. And oh, by the way, did you like Snoop Dogg on the NBC Warriors Clippers coverage? I actually talked about that yesterday. Let's stick with football here, and then we'll come on back to that for just a second. Sammy, wrap up, and then I know you got to run early today. I got to actually get going, a few things to do, so I can leave the house for 3 days without Jillian being very mad at me. I got some things I got to move on. You know, I got some things to do today.
It's a lot of daddy chore board, and I understand
The honey-do list is full.
The player that we should discuss here is Jalen Carter. You mentioned Trent Williams earlier. Jalen Carter has a way, not necessarily of sacking the quarterback. It doesn't come out in the statistics that you think and you can circle so easily. Now he may sack Brock Purdy, but it's not about this. Jalen Carter, if he's disrupting up the middle or from the edge, if Jalen Carter is disrupting the way that he is able to,
just pushing pockets,
that will determine this game. The best player defensively for either team, certainly considering what happened to the Niners on injury this season with Warner and Bosa watching this game. Jalen Carter is so far and away the best defensive player on the field in this game. Everything we've discussed has largely been about the offense and about things maybe the defense can do here and there. But one player that defensively could make this a different game and throw all of the exciting and interesting things that we're talking about out the water would be Jalen Carter.
What's the thing? If Jalen Carter is meeting Christian McCaffrey 3 yards behind the line of scrimmage, I'm going to tell you this right now. I really mean this. In the first 8 runs, not the first 8 plays, in the first 8 runs that the 49ers cook up in this game, I think you're going to know whether or not they even got a shot. I think you're going to know really early on, just based on, is McCaffrey hitting holes? Is he hitting daylight? Or is he hitting the ground behind Dominic Pooney? Is he hitting the ground behind Jake Brendel? If that's happening, you might have to turn out the lights because the party's over here. And again, I know the knives will come out from everyone. And, you know, we watched Kyle Shanahan go from everyone agreeing he really deserves to be in the coach of the year conversation to being motherfucked on Caltrain out of San Francisco and everybody hating him after the loss to the Seahawks. So the pendulum is going to swing, but I'm just telling you, I think the Niners are playing with house money. I think they're a dangerous house money player. But if I'm betting this game, I'm betting Eagles.
And that's I would say from a money line standpoint, to go Eagles here is safe and fair. But the Eagles fans are very salty about having this matchup. I was convinced the Niners were going to be the one seed because I saw 6 weeks ago the path based on the schedule to the Niners having the matchups in their building, Bears, Seahawks, to finish the season, to end up as the one seed. Things were falling in their favor to play for the one seed, and I thought being at home, why not give them the edge on that? Okay, fine. It turns out the offense scores 3 points in that game. But I saw the Niners as the most in anybody can take this tournament this year. I saw a Niners one seed as the most dangerous thing that would happen in either conference.
And now the Seahawks are number one with a bullet. I mean, like everybody says, they're the team to beat now. And I think that's a little statement of respect to the Niners. To make the Niners look that bad in a gotta have it game, a home game, not only did the Seahawks look good, but who they did it to and how they did it and just gashed. And here's the thing too, Jalen Hurts, say what you want about Jalen Hurts. Jalen Hurts is out there carving up. Jalen Hurts has got 170 passing yards by the time the first half is over. The bend don't break thing has been taken all the way to the end of bend don't break definitions here, to the point where at this point, it's not even a bend don't break defense. They're not very good. You know, I mean, that's where the 49ers could find themselves if the Eagles come out and are just healthy, rested, and firing. And that crowd is just, you know, there are very few stadiums the 49ers walk into and they'll have a disadvantage in the crowd. This is one of them.
This will be loud for the Eagles and it will be disgusting towards the Niners. And one other thing we have to say, we don't throw a ton of statistics at you, but the number one team in the red zone offensively this season is the Eagles. The Eagles, for all their woes on offense, have been incredibly efficient in scoring touchdowns. And by the way, as we mentioned earlier, it's not brotherly shove, tush, push either. They are throwing the ball more than ever from the 2-yard line, Damon. This team is hitting Devontae Smith, and they've got incredible wrinkles for Dallas Goedert. Not classic and typical tight end plays. They're running little pitches, that little Kelsey from Mahomes pitch inside. They've done that with Goedert. So of all the things, of all the heat Kevin Petullo has taken, this team near the goal line has figured it out this season, and it's not what you think. They're not plunging it in from the one. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking red zone, which is from the 20. This team is scoring when it gets there. When it's got opportunities, they figured that out. And the Niners
have to shut that down. Again, opportunistic red zone plays, getting off the field every other third down. It will be it's how about this? It's non-negotiable. It's non-negotiable. The Niners are going to have to be a very good team on third down, even if they're getting beat up on first and second. They're going to have to be. I don't know. I mean, look, say what you want about Tatum Bethune missing a lot of tackles in that Seattle game. He's a rookie, and he's around the ball. Now he's not going to be around the game. He's out. It's the Niners, I think, have taken the next man up mantra about as far as that can go, too. I mean, at some point, you know, this is something that Larry and I were arguing about this week, and I just said, look, man, you can't complain about lack of execution in your depth chart when you're on LB5, you know, when you're on your fifth line, but with a guy who wasn't even on your practice squad a month ago is now starting. That's pushing roster elasticity about as far as it goes before it breaks.
And with everything we've said about how disappointed we've been at points this season, with certainly the Niners at stretches, And the Eagles fans have absolutely been asking for Sirianni to be fired in a season where they won the first team to ever win the NFC's back-to-back since 2004. With all that being said, would you be stunned if the winner of this game isn't in the NFC Championship game?
Well, that's kind of how it goes for Shanahan.
Yes, we've said that.
Or in the NFC title game.
Yep.
And I would not be surprised either way. Let me just say, I do think the NFC West will be represented in the Super Bowl. I think it's going to be the Seahawks or the Rams. Maybe the Niners, probably not. But I think the Seahawks or the Rams are the team to beat in the NFC. And if the Eagles do something to change my mind, then yeah, I think what you just said has a very realistic chance of coming of age. I mean,
it's only one other game. I'm only talking about winning one more game, but I see this as a heavyweight bout. This is one that we really, for many years, we just didn't expect this year as a wild card.
Unfortunately, the Niners are coming in with a lightweight defense. That's what hurts this heavyweight matchup. Back to this question,
yes,
which has been patiently waiting for us. Again, I kind of talked about it yesterday on the show. So I had seen Snoop do a Peacock broadcast, and while I was watching it, I was thinking, you know, he's pretty funny and entertaining, but I wouldn't want him to be doing a game that, like, I were actually watching because the team that I'm covering or care about is in it. Well, then it's Clippers, Warriors, and Snoop Dogg, and he's got Reggie Miller, and I forget the guy who's their play-by-play guy. Snoop Dogg's fantastic. He's fantastic at being Snoop Dogg. He is one thing, and he is one thing only. He is Snoop Doggy Dogg, and he crushes that role every single time they ask him to play it. He is really good at being him, and if you like him, which I do, I think you're going to like him on the broadcast. It's funny. It feels like the guy you're sitting on a bench with. He's the dude you wish you were sitting behind in a game, you know, as a fan. And, you know, the only thing that's not happening, he's not reaching back and passing you a blunt. Like, it's cool. I like it. The problem with the broadcast, though, are the dorks around him trying to keep up with him and acting like they're cool with him or they would ever. Let me tell you, Snoop Dogg and Reggie Miller are, there's Snoop Dogg's cool. Reggie Miller's a dork who could shoot the basketball. The other white guy screamed, "I'm the white guy," trying to hang out with Snoop as he was hanging out with Snoop during the broadcast. Snoop wasn't the problem with the broadcast. It was the dudes who ain't as cool as him who I thought were the problem with the broadcast.
I love that you said it, that he rose above it And he absolutely shone through as who he is. And that's all he should be. And I like Snoop Dogg in every form I've seen Snoop Dogg. I mean, Snoop Dogg was on a Kings broadcast years ago. And I said, wow, he's in the broadcast with a hockey game. And I just thought, all right, at this point, there's nothing that this guy can't be cool at.
Because that was the Olympics, Martha Stewart cooking shows. He could host The Price is Right. He could fill in for you and me on this show and be fantastic. I don't know how much he knows about the Niners and the Eagles, but he could push his way through it. I'm sure he could. He is. There's only one person who sells what he sells. And he's a hell of a salesman when it comes to selling his brand. He really is. By the way, Scott in the Bay, thank you very much. Yes. That's going to get me a Georgia craft beer. Georgia Satellites. Remember Tony Bruno? Don't hand me no lines and keep your hands to yourself. What a great little intro buzzer that was. Go IU, go Niners. Thank you very, very much. We got Chef A, who's been down for 2 years of membership.
Way to go, Chef. Okay.
Sammy Damon, whatever happens to the basketball scandal, haven't heard about it lately. What basketball scandal or what?
Is he talking Clippers Kawhi? Where are we going?
Oh, it was that? Yeah, it was.
I mean, it could be. Yeah. I mean, that certainly was a huge scandal here in L.A. Absolutely. And right. It's really been
Let me ask you this. Whatever happened to Jeffrey Epstein? We don't have the attention span. And it's just amazing. But the Clippers should probably be thrown out of competition this year. They completely tried to circumvent the salary cap. There's no doubt about it. Come on. It is nuts. But yeah, Chef A, there you go. I mean, it even escaped my mind. I'm like, scandal? Basketball scandal?
That was it.
I'm so freaking locked in to the NFL. And then Indiana is just taking up all my other bandwidth. That's all I'm talking about. I talk about, like, my kids having a nice Christmas, Indiana football, and what are the Niners doing? I'm a three-topic human being, basically, at this point in my life. What did Fish play on New Year's Eve? I guess a fourth topic has come up last week, but...
And it should be for everybody. January is such a special month because you think that you've gotten to the end of the year and nothing's really going to matter. You're going to have this slow buildup to the beginning of your year. And then the football season is in such a maximized place when you're back in the new year, it throws you immediately back into that mindset. And that's what's beautiful about this.
What would you name the Vegas baseball team? Look, they're still going to be called the A's. Something will happen. So they'll figure it out. They will. But just the fact that this has gone on in plain sight for everyone to see, another example that the wrong team is coming to town. What the Vegas right now should cease and desist any further business with John Fisher's team, whatever it's called, and just petition Major League Baseball for an expansion team. Build the same stadium, the stadium that the A's have proposed looked awesome. Build that stadium, leave it generic, slap whoever team. Here's the funny thing. A buddy of mine yesterday, again, my buddy Ryan Busey, he's like, he's from Ohio, and he goes, hey, Indians is available. Go out there. Las Vegas Indians, go ahead. It's worked historically in baseball. It's out there.
That's great.
What is this? Damon, would you ever move to Bloomington? Oh. I'm telling you right now, Bloomington is one of the single most charming little Midwestern cities and greatest college towns in America. After getting laid off, if I weren't a married man with kids here in San Francisco, that might have been an option. I might have gone back to IU and said, you know, just infiltrated the athletic department to the point where now I'm Indiana sideline broadcaster doing a show there, something. I could have really been happy in Bloomington. There's no, it's a great, great town. But no, I'm kind of a San Francisco guy at this point. I need a city. I got to be honest with you. I need a city.
You're that deep, Bruce.
Here's a problem you and I don't have. See this Matt Khalil story? So I'm going to try to do like the contest episode. Let's talk about masturbation, but never use the word masturbation here.
Smart.
I will try to not use the phrase humongous dong. But that is kind of what we're talking about. Matt Khalil's ex-wife went on one of those, let's both pretend we're total whores podcasts. And basically said the reason why her marriage failed was because she likes an average size lunch and he packs a thermos every day full of soup.
That's great.
And that was a problem, apparently. And that, you know, went viral on social media. Apparently he gets, you know, six packs of cans of Coke are like all over his timelines now. People are throwing Coke cans at him. And it's embarrassed the hell out of him. He's a very private, apparently like quiet, religious type of guy. And he's embarrassed by this in the same funny way that Pete Davidson got embarrassed by this, that the rumor is. And so this is, I guess this is the guy's equivalent of, hey, my eyes are up here. My eyes are up here. My eyes are up here. And he is suing now his ex-wife for punitive damages for going on one of those, aren't we sluts podcasts and talking about this. And I honestly, I hope he wins. I really do. That's there are some things that are not supposed to be made public. There you go. That's probably, let me just tell you, if she's the kind of woman who's going to go on another podcast and talk like that, I don't think any physical attribute was the genesis of that divorce. You probably married the wrong person in the first place.
Congratulations to him.
How do you live through this problem, by the way?
Exactly. Look, this is something that, look, the Coke can mentions in my timeline are not quite as frequent, but I will simply say congratulations to Khalil on all of it. I think taking an incredibly high road on something that already is a tip of the cap anyway. So just bravo. Bravo there. I just think there's one path to walk there, and that's been a great way to do it.
Look at it this way. I'm sure for him it's a problem. It's among the best problems most men could ever trip over. Maybe that's the wrong way to put it.
Hilarious. But we talked about it. Mac Jones and Brock Purdy. That's a problem in the quarterback room because you get two great options for the Niners all season. Yeah, this is one of those elevated elite problem to have. Absolutely. Okay. And one other thing I wanted to say, Damon, was Sharks at Kings tonight as well. So this, what a week for you and I. We've got this Eagles and Niners train going at us, and the Sharks and the Kings are battling actually for the final wild card spot. And they got Sharks celebrating in the house tonight across the street from where I'm doing this right now.
Sharks. By the way, here's your NHL NFL doubleheader championship odds. If you think the Carolina Panthers and the Hurricanes can both win a championship, that's going off at 16.70 to 1. So nice odds there. You're probably throwing your money away. Avalanche and Denver Broncos, 29 to 1.
Wow.
The Avalanche might be better than the Broncos, and the Broncos are the one seed. Avalanche look incredible.
They're on a historic clip we've never seen in this league. That's a great one. 29 to 1's a lot to lay on championships, but I love it.
I know you got to get running, so real quickly, it's not the most interesting day in history. Go. But it starts with a phenomenal birthday, one of the patron saints of Yacht Rock. Happy 78th birthday to Kenny Loggins. Kenny's day today. Happy 69th birthday to Katie Couric. Will you be my Katie Couric? Happy birthday to Nicolas Cage, 62 years old. The least interesting Avenger, Jeremy Renner, turns 55 today.
But Hurt Locker.
Hurt Locker was very good. Lewis Hamilton, who's a race car driver, turns 41. And I guess Lamar Jackson got his birthday present yesterday. If he wanted John Harbaugh fired, happy birthday, Lamar Jackson. You're 29 years old and you're looking for a head coach. How stunned were you by the biggest news of Black Monday coming out on Tuesday with John Harbaugh's termination?
Completely. And again, as you know, I mean, Bishotti, I am friendly with Taylor Bishotti, who is, you know, tremendous. She's part of the NFL Network. She's great. And she's very tied to the Ravens. Clearly last name, you can tell why. And I was, jaw to the ground. I was shocked. When it was a rumor ahead of that game. And I like had the Steelers lost and Tomlin gets fired, much less surprising. That, like, of those two scenarios, this was the one I just never saw.
I honestly think that the New York Giants should have him in New York today and signing that deal today. And he's way too competent and good of a coach to sign on with the losers that are the Raiders, the Browns, the Jets, the Titans. The New York Giants are a good franchise that has just made some really bad decisions. They're not the same level of galactic losers those other franchises are, where, you know, losing is baked into the culture to the point where I don't think anyone can really change it. You know, if Tom Brady doesn't show up and change things a little, you're kind of a bunch of losers, I guess.
This is John Harbaugh's to choose in every single way.
He's the number one name on the board. Yes. Number one name on the board for sure. Let's see. Today in 1830, the very first U.S. railroad station opened in Baltimore, Maryland. Speaking of the Ravens of the Baltimore, there you go. Let's see. Today in 1927, Sammy, the Harlem Globetrotters played their first game in Hinckley, Illinois. You would have thought the Harlem Globetrotters' first game might have been a home game. They opened on the road. I'm guessing there wasn't a huge greeting for the Harlem Globetrotters in Hinckley, Illinois.
That's really bizarre. 1927?
Okay. Let's see. 1934, the very first Flash Gordon comic strip debuted across newspapers. In 1972, today, two scientists confirmed that they discovered the true existence of a black hole, which has always been a theory. They found one, and then like chess became a little bit of a phenomenon in the 70s, thanks to, you know, the chess master there.
Bobby Fischer,
thank you. I was blanking. Black holes became super popular there, and Disney's The Black Hole is still one of my favorite movies. I love The Black Hole. Do you remember that
great
movie?
One. That's it. Yeah. Yes, I do. Deep in there, but yes, a great one.
Today in 1990, the Leaning Tower of Pisa was closed for safety concerns and because Matt Khalil's wife said it didn't exactly fit. And that's all the show we got.
That's amazing. That's
what we got for you today. Sammy, always a pleasure, brother. Thank you so much for stopping on by. Now that you're a big-time NHL broadcaster, you're harder and harder to book these days, so I am really happy that we were able to put this one together. It needed to happen, and it did happen. Thanks to all of you for being here. Have we got any more supers that we got to just say thank you to or for? Damon, you ever met Trent Baalke? Yeah, I laughed at him the day that he drafted AJ Jenkins, and the Niners weren't particularly happy with me that day. But I was right, and I'm still here, and he's not. So thank you very, very much for tuning in. Thanks for all the supers. Thanks to the sponsors. Thanks to Sammy. Thanks to all of you. And please do remember that sports don't build character. They reveal it. And like that, they're gone.